Let's pause it all this.
Woo! Put Scooter on the phone, you bird brain.
What do you do, backflips? You jump up there in a silly suit? What do you do?
You go, bam! I want you to play that.
Hey, what's up, everybody? Welcome to another episode of Fast Freddy Rocks Youngstown from the beautiful Youngstown Studios here in downtown Youngstown. And we got a good show coming up here today. First of all, we're going to be talking with Donnie Iris. Donnie's got a show coming up. Donnie and the Cruisers will be playing at the Robbins Theater. And with me in the studio right now is my buddy Haas from Haas and the Juggernauts. And I can't believe all this time we've known each other. This is like the first time we sat down for an interview.
Yeah.
So we're going to talk in a little bit, you know, about, you know, what you got going on, what you've been up to, you know, just so, you know, your whole life history, you know, at least your musical history. There's some things we don't really need to know about, or maybe not. Maybe those are the good ones. But you got a gig coming up Saturday night at the Dash Inn.
Yeah, man. Really looking forward to it too, man.
And I know a lot of people are looking forward to that too. They're like, man, Haas is playing out, man. We haven't seen you for a while. So I think there's a lot of people that can't wait to see you back in action.
Man, I really am. COVID did a number on all of us, man. Oh. We took a break in the band right before COVID hit because two of us were having babies.
Uh-huh.
And we went to St. Patty's Day. It was supposed to be our first show back in 2019. Yeah. Boom, you know.
Bye. Oh.
Yeah,
so that is like a memory that just sticks in my mind because I was at Magic Tree at the time, and you know, first they canceled the parade, so they had the after parade party scheduled there, and you know, I mean, Rudy had all the tents set up and stages and beer trucks and just the whole nine yards. Yeah. And then, so then they canceled everything and they said, okay, well, they had me come out and play a little bit of music and that was about it. And then that's when the governor made the announcement that they were shutting everything down and we were all there and, you know, they said, hey, the governor's coming on. So, I mean, his whole staff, his whole crew, everybody comes into the back room and they have this TV on. And then here goes DeWine talking about, we're shutting it down tonight at 5 o'clock. And everybody started crying. And then that turned out to be such a big blow because it was 2 years before we got back into that. Could you believe that?
We all lost 2 years. It's incredible.
Yeah. Yeah. And I really think, and I've been saying this a lot, is I think now people are ready to get out. I think we got this behind us now and everybody's like, okay. And I think St. Patty's Day this year really kind of got the ball rolling. You know, the parade came back and, you know, all the places that have, you know, known for their big St. Patty's Day parties start rocking. Right. And it just seems now that people are like, okay, we've been cooped up. And I think this is going to be actually our first summer in 2 years where people are actually going to be able to get out and we're going to be able to go to a lot of these shows
like
and stuff.
Like, well, this thing's just like a flu now, and now we can just operate like we do every other day.
Yeah, right, right. And that was a tough 2 years. So during that 2 years, did you write some songs or what were you doing? Are you chilling?
Man,
or
I had a 3-month-old, right?
Hey, it's Fast Freddy.
My daughter was born in December.
Yeah.
December 18th, 19. So like she was 3 months old and then boom. So I just spent a lot of time with her.
But you know what? That's really cool though. I think it really worked out, you know, and like me, I was laid off, you know, from my other, you know, station. And actually I was really enjoying it other than the COVID because I couldn't travel anywhere.
Right.
But I'll tell you what, during the time I was laid off and during COVID, I rode my motorcycle more than I ever did. I went fishing more than I ever did and a lot of outdoor stuff. So right. I was really enjoying it. Then when I got back on Y103, it was almost kind of like, oh shit, I got to go back to work. You know,
that was the last time you really had a day.
Yeah. Seriously. And I'll tell you what, I got so into that groove. It was like, this is freaking awesome. You know? And then when I first started back to work, I was kind of like, oh man, I got to be there.
Shocked.
Yeah. Because I was like, you know, day drinking and laying around in my sweats all day. And, oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, yeah, I got my tea. Well, today I got my Cinco de Mayo beads on here. I got my Cinco de Mayo beads on. So I think we're ready for the interview. How are we coming, Joe? Okay, 3 more minutes. And we're going to have play back my interview with Donnie Iris. And then we'll come back and we'll talk to Haas and, you know, and just talk about your career, some of the cool places you've played over the years, how you got into it, just the whole nine yards. So you know, now you got the Dash In. Are you plan on doing a lot of gigs? You getting back into it, or what's the deal?
We're doing as many as we can this year. Like now we all have kids. So my bass player, his wife's pregnant, and my guitar player is the second. I've got two. The drummer's got one. And my sax player, he's got a couple. It's just like, man, you know, we're trying to space them out, keep ourselves busy, but not overload our wives.
Right. Yeah. That's a good way to do that. That's a good way to do that because, you know, when you're in a band like that, I mean, it takes a lot. And especially if you want to sound good, and you guys have always sounded great, you know, when you want to maintain that level of professionalism, it's not like we're practicing while we're on stage at the bar, you know? And I think there are some bands out there that do that. It's like, oh, well, band practice. Okay. We're going to learn this song here while we're on stage. That don't cut it, man.
No. What we do, we normally send each other ideas through Spotify. We have like an organic list on there that we add and subtract songs from, and then we'll have a phone combo and just be like, all right, we need to learn these four. And so we'll all on our own time, learn those four, and then we'll come together. Cause it's hard to get a rehearsal to even together. So
yeah.
The plan of rehearsal is we've notched out time, and you know, you got 2-3 hours and that's it. So you got to get in there, get done, and get out.
Yeah. And that's a good way to do it because now you're not sitting there because you know how band rehearsal goes, you know,
right, for them to find the right note.
And then a couple of beers and everything else. And then, and see, this goes with the whole thing with the kids too, because next thing you know, you're looking at your clock and you're going, it's 12:30. how do we get to, you know, and it's like, did we even get anything done?
You get all this messages from the wife going, you were supposed to be home 4 hours ago.
Yeah.
You're not wrong.
It's like Beth, you know, hey, Beth, I hear you calling, but the boys of the band or whatever, however that line goes, you know, that's how it is, man. The boys are playing all night. And so it's not like the good old days. So I think we're ready with the interview. We're going to have a little conversation here with Donnie Iris to get you ready for his show Saturday night at the Robbins Theater in downtown Warren. And then when we wrap up with Donnie, we're going to be back with Haas, and we're going to talk about the Youngstown rock and roll scene and the good old days and just, you know, all the fun stuff. All the fun stuff. So let's take care of Donnie. I think, Donnie is here. We're going to have a little bit of the Buffalo Trace, a little bit of espresso, and I think we'll be ready to go. So the second half of the show is really going to kick it in.
Nice. Hey, it's Fast Freddy here with my pal Donnie Iris. Right. Donnie and the Cruisers are coming to Robbins Theater in downtown Warren this Saturday night. It is going to be a great show. And if you haven't seen a show at Robbins Theater yet, I strongly urge that you get down there. It is such a great room. Donnie, welcome to the show. How you doing, brother? How you been, man?
Thanks, Freddy. I'm doing good, man. Yeah, I hear Robbins is a great place, man. Yeah, I remember playing there right before COVID. And I'm anxious to get back at it, man.
Yeah, I think the last time you've been around town is when you played with Styx down at the Youngstown Amphitheater.
Yeah, that's right. It was last June or July, I think. But yeah, it looks like we're able to get out and play again, man. Thank God.
Oh, yeah, it's sure great to get back out there and get back to seeing some live music and everybody getting back to work. And it's been a long time coming, man. And I think, you know, I really think this is going to be a bust out summer. I think everybody has been cooped up for almost 2 years now. And I think everybody is getting ready to bust out and have a good time and get back to this live music.
I hear you, Freddie. I hear you, man. It's been so long. Of course, I've been getting out here lately, going and hearing bands and having a great time, man.
So yeah, as a matter of fact,
down.
I think
I'm down with it, man.
I think the last time I ran into you was down at Kelly's Island down in Bridgeport.
Yeah, Bridgewater.
Bridgewater.
PA. Yeah, Beaver. And it was cool, man.
Yeah,
I'm glad. Glad to hook up with you again, brother.
Yeah, man, that was a nice place. Now, you're from Beaver Falls, Elwood City area, right?
Yeah, right. I grew up in Elwood, and I spent many years in Beaver Falls.
Boy, an Italian in Elwood City, that had to be a little awkward. You don't find too many Italians in Elwood City.
That's a good one, man. That's all there is in Elwood is Italians.
Do you have any favorite Italian sayings you still like to throw out there every once in a while?
Oh, I got a few of them, but I can't tell you what they are.
Not ones that you can use on the radio. The good ones, huh?
Nope.
That's awesome. Now, Donnie, how did you first get into the music business? What was it that influenced you and inspired you?
Well, I'll tell you what. Early on, my mother played piano, and she kind of taught me how to sing when I was real young. And then my voice changed when I was like 12 or 13 or whatever. And, you know, I just thought, hey, you know, I can't do this. It just doesn't sound right. And then when I got into college, it wasn't for me. You know what I mean? I just wanted to play guitar, and I started practicing guitar while I was supposed to be doing my homework or whatever.
Right.
And I decided to leave, and I went on the road with a group called the Jaggers. That would have been like 1966, something like that, 65 maybe. But yeah, I decided that was it, and I was going to pursue music.
So who were some of the bands that influenced you? And some of the people that
Well, the normal people, you know, during that time would have been the Beatles and the Stones and, you know, those kind of bands. But I liked all the stuff that Motown was putting out. Marvin Gaye was always my favorite singer of all time. And all those people have influences on me. I just grew up around a lot of different types of music. So, yeah, all of them had pretty much, some kind of influence with me.
You know, I can still remember hearing the Jaggers and the Rapper for like the first time on WHOT. Mm-hmm. I can remember Boots Bell playing that song, and that was just a song that just jumped right out of the speakers, jumped right out of the radio.
Yeah, I hear you, man. Those were the days. That happened we recorded in 1969, and it became a hit in like March of 70. So that was quite a time, man. It was just so much fun.
Now, I remember you used to play a place called The Apartment here in Youngstown back in the day. You have any memories of The Apartment or The Freak Out?
Well, you know what, man? There were so many bars and places I played in Youngstown. It's hard for me to remember all that. But I do remember the name of the place was The Apartment. I mean, we played the Tomorrow Club. We played... what was it called before that? I can't even remember. But Youngstown was always good to me, man. We had a lot of fun in that town, I'll tell you that.
Now, the Tomorrow Club, of course, was like the rock club, especially for all of us growing up at that time, because everybody and their brother played there when they were coming up, whether it was Journey or Kiss or Ellis Cooper or Bob Seger, Donnie Iris.
Bon Jovi played there with me one time.
Yeah, how about that? Tell us that story. That's a great story that Bon Jovi kind of adopted you guys, and they were doing their set with Donnie Iris t-shirts, if I recall.
Yeah, they were. They were like they were just coming up, and they were great, man. They opened for us at the Tomorrow Club. Do you remember that?
Yes. Yep.
Yeah, they opened. They were sensational, man. They were good. You could tell they were going places.
Yeah, that was the beauty of that Tomorrow Club, though, man. It was like all these bands, it seemed like you would see them there on a Tuesday night for $2, and it was like a year later, they were the biggest bands out there. They're headlining stadiums and stuff. It was really a crazy time, but such a great club.
Oh, yeah, it was. It for sure was. They sprung a lot of great acts, man. I'll tell you, they were awesome. They were awesome.
Now, what was the Pittsburgh music scene like at that same time, too, when you guys were busting out and, what were some of the cool clubs in Pittsburgh and what was the scene like there in Pittsburgh at this same time?
Well, for years we were playing Pittsburgh clubs. We played, we played at least 3 or 4 times a week in Pittsburgh at small clubs. And then when Leah came out, during that period of time, then we played the Stanley Theater. Do you remember that place?
Yes, I do.
Yep, the Stanley Theater. We did a sold out show. I think it was us and I think Norman Rodini might have been there with me. I can't remember, but yeah, it was a great time, man. Great place to play. Things were busting out all over.
Man, just the great bands in Pittsburgh at that time, and you and Norman and Joe Grushecki. Yep. You guys really had that. You really had the scene pumping at that time.
Yep, we did, man. We sure did. There was B.E. Taylor. Remember B.E. Taylor?
Yes.
Doing a lot of stuff then.
Right.
Just one after another bands playing in Pittsburgh. It was a great time, man. It really was.
That really was.
You don't see much of that anymore, man. There's not too much of that.
No,
you know what? I wanted to tell you, when the Vindies, man, they're happening, aren't they?
Oh, yes, they are, man. They are up and coming, and they really got a lot of momentum going right now, man. They got a lot of they're on a roll. I think they might be the next band from our area to hit it big. I really do. They're selling out some places, and they moved up from the clubs to like some smaller theaters and stuff. I'll tell you what, man, that band's got a lot of momentum behind them right now.
I'll tell you, man, they are sensational, man. Jackie sings so good, man. Wow. She's amazing. I love her, man. She's just, and Rick and the rest of the guys, they pump it out. I'm telling you.
And you know what?
They pump it out.
And they're such great people too, man. They are just nice people. And I'll tell you, any success that they get, they deserve. You couldn't ask for a better bunch of people.
No, you couldn't, man. No, you couldn't. They're wonderful people.
But, we always lament about those days when a musician could make a living playing seven nights a week. And we would have all these clubs, even around in a city like Youngstown, where there would be clubs rocking seven nights a week, and there'd be bands in each and every one of them. It was just a crazy time.
Yeah, I know. What happened, man? What happened, Freddie? I don't know.
Well, one of the big things I think that happened was the DUIs. Once they started cracking down on the DUIs, I think that had a major impact on the bar scene. But it's like people they don't go out like they used to, man. I mean, for us back at that point in time, rock and roll was a religion almost, I mean, we lived to go see bands. We lived to go see concerts. And that was our big thing. We lived to listen to the radio and buy records. I mean, and it just was like through our whole culture, even as kids, you look at the TV shows like the Partridge Family and the Monkees and the Beatles cartoons and, everything, the Banana Splits, everything was just focused on rock music.
It really was, man. It's just different right now. But you're right, the DUI thing meant a lot. People don't want to go up and get pinched for, you lose your license, you pay fines. It's not that it's a bad thing. I mean, it's a good thing that they did do that, I think, because of all the issues with drunk drivers. But it did have an impact, man. It really did.
Yeah, it certainly did. Now, what do you think is one of your biggest gigs or your most famous gigs or one of the gigs that you look back and say, damn?
Oh, man, I don't know, man. That's hard to say. I would say when Leah first came out and all of a sudden we were headlining, place like the Stanley Theater. That I would say would probably be the most, the one I remember most, because after that we went on tour with Loverboy. We went on tour with Hall & Oates. We did some gigs with Nugent. We did all this stuff. So they were just, it was a crazy time. But to remember a single place, I would say the Stanley Theater in Pittsburgh when we first hit.
That first big gig, and then it was like, man, we're on to something. I think this is going to work.
Yeah, I guess so.
That has got to be an awesome feeling. Well, you opened for Michael Stanley for those big shows at Blossom, too, when they set the attendance record, didn't you?
Yeah, we did. We played. It was four nights in a row. They sold out all four nights. I mean, nobody's ever done that. Nobody.
To this day.
So, yeah, we opened for them. That's right.
Gary Markowski told me after those four gigs, he bought a new car with the T-shirt sales. With his cut of the t-shirt sales, he bought a new car.
Well, good for him, man. Good for him.
You know, that was always a great double bill, you and Michael. You guys had a good friendship going over the years, huh?
Yeah, we did. Our manager, Mike Falcon, who passed away also, and that's how we came to know each other. Mike Falcon was our manager. And, you know, we became great friends and, you know, we played so many shows together, man. They were just great shows, up until the time he passed away.
Right.
We were doing shows at the, what is that place? The casino there.
Northville Park.
Yeah. We played there like every right around Christmas every year for like 3 or 4 years.
Oh yeah, great shows. Yeah,
it was a great run. It really was a great run.
Great times. Now let's go back and talk a little bit about just Pittsburgh bands in general. It seems like you guys are Yinz guys. It seems like Yinz guys have such solid bands. I mean, when you look at like you look at the Clarks, I mean, bands like Rusted Root, Joe Grushecki. Yeah. I mean, when you guys do a show, you always put on a good show. I have never seen Donnie Iris have an off night. I have never seen the Clarks have an off night. It's like you guys just bring it every time you play.
Yeah. And they're still doing it, man. The Clarks are still at it. I went to see Scott Blasey the other night at a small club. He was by himself and he put on the show all by himself. I mean, he was great. That boy, he's an entertainer, man. I'll tell you, he's great. I love that guy.
So what is it about Donnie Iris that Pittsburgh, why does Pittsburgh love Donnie Iris so? I think you could be elected mayor. You could be elected king of Pittsburgh. Why? What is it about Donnie Iris in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania? Why do they love you, man?
I think it's more of the fact that I'm out and about. I meet people. I talk to them. We take pictures. We do all kinds of stuff. I mean, I still do that stuff. I'm not a shut in or anything like that. And I think that's really what they like about me. It's just like, I'm just one of the people, you know what I mean? I'm a Yinzer just like they are.
Right. I buy that. I think you hit the nail right on the head with that one. So I know you're also a cigar nut. What's a good cigar you're smoking these days?
Well, right now I'm smoking a Monte Cristo. Although I like all kinds of different cigars, I'm smoking one as we speak.
Well, I figured that. Now, here's my question. You love them cigars, but you still have the best scream in rock, or one of the best screams in rock. How do you manage that, man? How does your voice stay so good?
I think the cigars coat the throat. You know what I mean? They leave a nice little coating on your throat to make it easy to sing. That's all I can think.
Oh, that's awesome. Now, one more question, and then we'll wrap it up. Now, I know that over our many conversations throughout the years, it has come up that you're a big fan of the movie Scarface. What is it that you love about Scarface?
What can I say, man? You know what I mean? Who put this thing together? Me. That's who. I love Scarface. I love that guy, man. And another one I like is Tombstone. Did you ever see Tombstone?
Oh, Tombstone is one of the greatest of all times, huh?
Of all time. Doc Holliday. That was the greatest movie. Out of all the movies I've ever seen, there's so many that I love. But that one is in the top of the heap, man. It's just great. I love that movie, man. Yeah, and I'm a movie buff, that's for sure.
Well, Johnny Ringo. You know,
you look like someone just walked across your grave.
And those guys were just so cool with the with the mustaches and everything. Just the look, you know, Sam Elliott, you know, those guys. Everything about that movie is perfect, you know?
It's perfect. No nominations at all. You know that?
Unbelievable.
Never got a nomination for Academy Award.
You know, you look
not
on
fa- one.
you look on Facebook and you look on all these things where these little videos pop up, anything you see on there about Tombstone, everybody just loves it. It's just such a classic. It's same with Scarface, man. You know, the scene when they chop up his brother with the chainsaw in that shower.
Oh, my God. It's just some of the things he says are so funny. Like, fly, Pelican, fly. I love it, Freddie. Oh, I love it.
That's some great stuff. So, Donnie, what can people expect when they come and see you this Saturday night at the Robbins Theater in downtown Warren?
They got to expect a full rock and roll show, man. We're gonna bring it, man. We're going to bring it.
And they're related to air.
Hey, we are back. All right. That's our conversation with Donnie Iris. Donnie is a great guy. He is still going strong. And Donnie still to this day has one of the best screams in rock and roll. And the guy smokes cigars like, you know, some people smoke cigarettes. And he could just still come out there and just hit those notes, man. That's amazing. Incredible. He's a great guy, and you can catch Donnie this Saturday, Robbins Theater in downtown Warren. And let me tell you something. If you have not seen a show at the Robbins Theater yet, that place is fantastic. It's a great place for a show, and Kenny and them guys have done a great job restoring that, and it's just a great night out. And I know I saw Tracy down there not too long ago. And what show were we at?
Kenny Wayne Shepherd.
Yeah, Kenny Wayne Shepherd. Boy, that was a good show, huh?
Well, it was.
That was awesome. I'll tell you, that Devin Allman, Samantha Fish, that was another great one.
I want to live vicariously through you two.
And Ace Frehley.
He goes more.
Ace Frehley was really good. Oh, man. You know, say what you want about Kiss, but the Kiss Army is still faithful. And I'll tell you, you saw so many people with Spaceman shirts on and and everybody was into it. It was a great time. And it's just a good time. Now, if you're looking for something a little more bluesy, something a little more intimate, something on the west side of Youngstown, you're going to want to check out my man Haas here. Haas and the Juggernauts are going to be playing. And first of all, we have Tracy here. So Tracy could tell us a little bit about the Dash Inn and everything. But first of all, you can put your Steelers hat back on. You know, Tracy come in and she's wearing a Steelers hat. And I told Joe, I said, Joe, aren't you checking at the door? Don't we have a dress code here? And then she tells me, oh, you'll never guess who gave me this hat. And I'm like, who? And she goes, oh, your sister Lenny gave me this hat. And I'm like, oh, okay. So now you really got to rub it in.
Yeah. But she is also the mother of Tim, is the greatest child in the world, so we must wish her a happy Mother's Day a little early.
Oh yeah, for bringing Tim
into the world. Yes, yes, we must. Just has to be done.
I don't even want to start getting into that, but she'll
be calling.
Yeah, she'll be sending pictures of Tim into us or whatever, and I can just see that happening. Yeah, I have to hear from. I have
Three,
to hear about that all
two.
The time.
One.
And how about that Pens game? Now, you know, you've worked many years at PPG Arena and also at Star Lake and
Hinesfield too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I'd always see you down there at the Pens games. And boy, you had to be excited about that game.
Oh my God. Night. Triple overtime? Yes, absolutely. It's just breathtaking to see them back again like that.
Now, you must have had a lot of fun working there and also at Star Lake.
Well, it was really incredible working there during the two seasons back-to-back championships. That was the most amazing period of my life, I would have
to
say.
The energy alone.
Yeah. I mean, outside and inside. The real fans were outside.
Yeah.
The fashion show was inside.
Right.
But the outside and all those bars around the arena – they were hopping.
Games like that.
Yeah. The poor people are the real fans. They're outside.
Yeah, right.
They're sneaking in bits of everything and under their shirts and in their pants. And, you know, we don't see a damn thing in security. We're just having a good time with them, you know.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
That's the way it used to be before the pandemic, of course.
But, right.
You know, but yeah, it was a good time. They used to bring out a big screen, like a big outdoor movie screen.
Oh, that's, I love when they do that.
And yeah, and every game, you know, they would have that home game. So the place would be packed outside. Packed
and then
outside.
How about at Star Lake? What were some of your fun things there? That'd be crazy.
One of the best memories I ever had of working at Star Lake, I was working backstage, and it's a shack. It is really a shack. It's spiders and cobwebs and animal critters and all that. And there actually is a lake behind Star Lake in the backstage, yeah, behind the stage. And believe it or not, there's a golf tee. There's a place in the back where the artists come off their buses and they're the light of day hits them and they pull out their golf clubs and they buy buckets of balls off of some lady that
that's runs amazing.
The ball place in the back of Star Lake. And I kid you not, I was back there and, you know, everybody's always messing around, yeah, all these big stars and stuff. And you're not allowed to say anything or ask right. them for their autographs or anything, yeah, but right. you can watch. And kid you not, Rob Thomas, is that Matchbox 20?
Yeah.
Matchbox 20 was playing there. Rob Thomas, I guess he's a big golfer. And there was like five people around, myself included in that five. He hit a hole in one.
What?
On the island in that lake. He hit it like.
So did you guys go, yeah.
Oh, yeah. The whole, you know. I mean, there was only five of us and like uh-huh. we couldn't act all crazy and cheer yeah. and high-fiving, but. You just kind of drop your jaw and on and go, oh my God, I just saw Rob Thomas hit a hole in one after people would buy like hundreds and thousands of balls and shoot it at this island in the middle of this little lake and never even get on the island, you know? And
yeah.
he sank it. I saw it with my own eyes and everybody else there would see it too. So That was the most interesting thing I ever saw there.
You know, really. It just shows you too how things have changed over the years. You know that these rock stars get off the bus and want to go golfing before it would be like groupies and
right?
any kind of drugs they could get their hands on and yeah, mass sure. quantities of alcohol and come staggering off. Half of them wouldn't mm-hmm. even be up at that early to go out in the daylight to yeah. see
yeah.
this.
You yeah, know? You'd see them come off their buses and. The light hitting them in the eyes. Another what? One was Kelly Clarkson. Kelly Clarkson had like the Taj Mahal on wheels and she brought her dogs with her. And she had a little kiddie pool, one of those plastic kiddie pools. You would know about that, right?
All about it.
Yeah. And
don't fit in them, but I know about
she
it.
Brought a kiddie pool for her dogs. She had like these little Yorkies or kind of little miniature breed like uh-huh. that. And she brought a kiddie pool out for her dogs and had their awning out on her trailer.
A gaggle of Yorkies.
It was like camp out over at Pima Tuning or something.
Oh, that's pretty wild.
She owns a giant ranch down in Texas. So.
That's pretty wild. Yeah, her bus it's still is Star Lake to me. It has always been Star yeah. Lake to me.
I was supposed to see Foo Fighters there, as a matter of fact.
Oh. What's it called now? It's changed names like.
Yeah, now it's and now pavilion. It's something at Star Lake. It's pavilion. Like the pavilion at Star Lake,
yeah.
which
yeah.
they should have always kept it there. You know,
it wasn't it was just the Star Lake Pavilion.
It
was Star Lake Amphitheater. That's what it was called originally.
PNC yeah. Pavilion. Yeah.
And then it was the first Niagara Pavilion. First Niagara. Then it was the Post Gazette Pavilion.
Post Gazette.
I saw
Coca-Cola. Yeah,
I shouldn't say I saw, but I went to Ozfest when it was Post Gazette. I didn't make it in the door.
Oh no! What happened?
We partied. We had some serious cello shots on that bus.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, made our legs all jello-y too, man. We posted up on the lawn chairs in the front of the bus and just listened to the music from there. Man. Yeah. It was like the party all day.
Oh yeah, I'll tell you that. Ozfest was always great. Lollapalooza was always great. 92, 93, I think were the really good years for Lollapalooza.
Buffett.
Yeah.
Buffett
oh, every Jimmy time. Buffett. I've been to every single one. You know.
Yeah.
And it is still such a party. It is still such a party. And speaking of parties, we got to talk about what we got going on this weekend. We got Haas here, and I haven't even talked to Haas, you know. But
I know. I want to talk to Haas, too. It's all good. Oh, my God. Haas is
well, enjoying the first conversation. First of all, tell us what we got going on.
Okay. We're going to have the last of the series of Dash and Blues Days in May. We had one every month, and we had some bands, Bobby Thompson, the group, were there last month. Charlie Brath, Oh, it was amazing.
Who's coming back, by the way? He's going to be doing some harp lessons. If you're a harmonica player,
oh, really?
And he's going to be on, and he's fantastic, and he's going to start giving some lessons. And he's
That's great.
You know, give you some. You know, you can call in, and you know, he'll give some tips and tricks. And
nice.
So that's going to be a lot of fun.
Anyhow,
I'm looking forward to that.
This Saturday at 7 o'clock, we are having Haas and the Juggernauts on the west side of Youngstown.
Yeah, man.
And we're really excited about it because it's our hometown, guys. You know, and Haas doesn't play out a lot.
I don't.
And so it's
new
a
dad
special
and coming
treat.
Off of COVID.
Yeah.
So. Oh, man, I was telling Freddie earlier, man, we had bad timing. We all took a break. We took a break 3 months before my daughter was born, and my guitar player's daughter had just been born, and it's his second kid. And that was and when Josie turned 3 months old, my wife went back to maternity leave on March 11th, and the March 12th, they shut us all down. So I was like, oh, wow. Up until last summer, I did 2 shows, one at Shakers and one at the Backyard. That was it. And those were just kind of like getting your feet wet. We were basically getting ourselves ready for a couple weddings we had. Like, yeah,
right.
You know, we haven't seen each other in 2 years. Didn't see each other for 2 years. Like, yeah. So that was like crazy.
It was a tough time for everybody. And like we had said earlier, hopefully we're getting back into this groove. And I think everybody is just ready to bust out. Everybody's ready to get out, see some live music, see some bands, interact with people, have a couple of drinks. And that's what it's all about. Yeah. So, Haas, tell us a little bit about yourself. You know, we've known each other for years. It's the first time we really had a chance to sit down, but we have done gigs all over the place. So, you know, where are you from? How, you know, tell us a little bit about your background.
Well, I grew up outside of Youngstown in Middle Ridge. My mom and dad met in choir class. They both could sing.
Uh-huh.
My mom used to clean house for an opera singer, and she was there cleaning house and let me kind of ding around. And I snuck downstairs where this lady taught her lessons, and she heard me doing what she was teaching when she came out of a lesson, and she carried me up to my mom and said, I'll teach your boy for free. So like, I was classically trained from the time I was 4 or 5 until I was like 12. So when she kicked me out, I wanted to play football and she wanted me to play piano.
Yeah. You know, now you're classically trained. I know Paul Scourin from Noisy Mama is classically trained. Mm-hmm. Leanne Binder, yep. You know, so a lot of you guys that have these really good voices are, this isn't just something that you just picked up and says, hey, I could sing. So I mean,
it helps to have some talent, but you know, there was a lot of work involved, and especially at a young age, that a lot of really boring exercises.
Uh-huh. Give me an example, because your voice is so good. This guy's got such a
voice. Oh, I know.
Give us a little
love at first sight.
I still do the same warm-ups now before a show that I did when I was, you know, 5, 6, 7, 8 years old.
Uh-huh.
I just like go through the, you know, the do, re, mi, fa, sol, la, ti, do's, but I just use the L in front of all the different vowels. So I go la 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 la. I just work my way up the scale, and you just push yourself until you get to where you crack, and then you pull back and go back down, and then you wait like 10 minutes, do it again. And this is a gradual warm up, because you don't want to blow yourself out before. I had a friend that used to warm up for like 2 hours before a show. Then he'd get to the show and he had these incredibly hard notes and, you know, nothing.
Yeah.
I'm like, bro, you blew your gasket before you even stepped on stage.
Right.
So, and the older you get, the more careful you got to be too. You know, so
yeah, that's the thing. You know, some people, you know, they just blow their voices out. But I noticed the people that are classically trained and they're really serious. I think Rama might have been classically trained as a singer as well, if I'm not mistaken. Violin. That's right.
Yeah. He has a violinist.
Yeah.
And then, you know,
I love those two.
The interesting thing about Rama is that I didn't know, that I discovered about him. He was a champion bluegrass fiddler. He was a kid, and his dad would take him all over the East Coast and everywhere, and he would
never told me that
he would saw in all these big bluegrass things.
Oh, I'm gonna make him play some fiddle for me. I'm gonna make him play some fiddle.
He's the one who introduced me to Haas. There was this blues festival right down at B&O Station back in 19 before the pandemic.
Yeah,
and I came up from Pittsburgh for the weekend.
He had me come over and sing with Triple Threat. They were playing across. It was
down by the river.
Triple Threat, and then me. Yeah,
I never saw you. I never knew anything about you until Rama and Kim asked me to go to that B&O Station, and it was like I was sitting with his mother, as a matter of fact, Jane, and she's like, watch
this. That's right. His mom was at that show.
Like, hold my beer, watch this. And I'm like, where have you been hiding this guy? This is a very recognizable voice. It's like tender. Tenderness.
Yeah, yeah. He, you know, Oz belts these songs out, man. He's got so much soul. Okay, so now you got to make this decision. You want to play piano, you play football, so you decide to be a Mineral Ridge Ram.
Yeah, man, we're actually good, too. My junior year, we went to playoffs for the first time in school history.
Uh-huh.
But, I mean, football didn't really take me anywhere. It kept me in athletics, you know, kept me athletic. The whole time I was in football, I ended up going back to piano lessons when I was like 14, 15, 16. And learning more piano. I always kept with the classical training. I never stopped that. Like I said, I still do the same warm-ups.
Yeah.
And in my high school, we had this really cool thing called Escapades. It's one of my teachers, Pam Playship, would put on to raise money for the scholarship fund because they basically did everything they could for the kids. You know, it was a good school system. And it was a talent show. So she would exploit me every way she possibly could. Uh-huh. I'd start with two songs, and by the time it was showtime, I'd have five. I need a filler. Do this song. I need somebody else. Yeah, do this. You got to sing this with these people. Okay, whatever you say. Well, I ended up sticking with music. But that was the classical side. But I learned how to sing like soul. A couple buddies of mine used to take me to a gospel church with them for 4 years of high school. I went to Monument of Faith in Warren. Randomly, not on a regular basis, but like, you know, once a month, you know, here or there. And I really learned so much about music there that I would have never learned anywhere else. It took my idea of what singing a note was and just blew my mind. And then there was no stopping me from being able to do that after that. I was like, I'm going to sing like my friends sing.
It's you know, amazing. There are so many gospel, you know, so many R&B singers that's where they really cut their teeth is in church and in the Baptist church choirs. And,
oh, yeah, man.
You know, I mean, I think you can go to the list from, you know, Little Richard to
the Winans were already Franklin. Big, but like God's Property, Kirk Franklin and God's Property that first album they did blew my mind. There was a song called Up Above My Head, I Hear Music in the Air. That song, I still can hear that. That bass line just gets me. I can't stop it. But yeah, it's that was one of the first songs. I'll tell you what happened. We were at a congregation. We go to church. You go to church all day. It's a whole day. Everybody goes to lunch together. They come back. Came back from lunch, and they seat separated. So like the men on one side, the women on the other. And I saw my buddy's mom passing a note up to the deacon, and he opened it up and said, we have a request for a brother Joe to come sing with us right now. My real name is Joe.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, man. And I said, the only way I'm singing is if my friends come sing with me. They had a killer youth choir. So they brought the whole youth choir up. And we sang that song. I'd never performed it before in my life. I only knew the two verses. But you would have thought it was rehearsed. People were dancing in the aisles, hats flying up in the air. It was incredible. Changed my life. That day changed my life for music. I mean, it just made me know that I wanted to do something with music at some point. You know what I mean? And wow. Then I took a left turn after high school, but I came back.
Well, that's awesome. That's a crazy story there.
Yeah, it was incredible. I'd never been part of something like that up to that point in my life where people literally was doing cartwheels, backflips, like down the aisle.
Like on the Blues Brothers.
I'm a swear to God. It was like, blew my mind. And Cedric was like, that's Sunday. My buddy was just, this is just Sunday, man. This is what we do. I was like, that's incredible. It was just incredible. The spirit, the love, the camaraderie, the family feeling that it was, you can't change. I mean, you can't touch it. It was amazing. That changed my life for better and for music.
That is amazing. You know, because that was going to be my next question. When did you really get that feeling that like, hey, this is something I could do? Or you got that taste of blood, as they say.
That was it. The blood was in my mouth at that point. I tasted it, man. And yeah, there was a part of me that really wanted to be an athlete. So after I graduated high school, I went and became a pro wrestler. And I traveled around the country for 5 years.
Really?
With the minor league WWE. Yeah.
Well, tell me more about this, man.
Not everybody knows about us, but you can actually. After we're done, I'll show you. There's a match of mine on YouTube.
Uh huh.
So my one buddy only posted two of them. I'm surprised anybody had any footage. They were all VHS.
Yeah.
Back in the day, But yeah, I went to HWA, Heartland Wrestling Association in Cincinnati, and was there for 4 years. And we ended up being a farm league for WWE when McMahon bought both ECW and WCW.
Yeah.
The employees that he kept, he split between three schools, Connecticut, Louisville, and Cincinnati. And we, from there on out, every Sunday for 2 years, we drove to Louisville, did TV tapings. I worked with John Cena, Dave Bautista, Brock Lesnar, Hugh Morris, Jamie Lynn, Eddie Guerrero. I mean, the list goes on, man. I got to hang out with some of the coolest cats ever. And I mean, I was young. I was like 19, 20. So I basically drove these guys around from interview to the gym, to their hotel, I was the lackey for lack of a better term, you know? And it was really cool to get to learn. I got to learn how to throw an arm drag from Ricky the Dragon Steamboat himself. I mean, that was incredible. And at 300 pounds, he said, for being 300 pounds, boy, you dip your elbow as deep as I do. And that was like, that blew my mind. Like,
yeah.
That's Ricky the Dragon Steamboat, man.
We like wrestling.
Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, man, I loved it when I was a kid, you know?
Yeah.
But that, I ended up getting hurt about 5 years in. I got slammed during a match outside the ring, and my tailbone hit, and I lost feeling in my legs for like 25 minutes.
Scariest
moment in my life.
Yeah.
I literally crawled to the locker room, and everybody thought it was the greatest sell in history, and I'm like freaking out because I think I'm never going to walk again.
Yeah.
Well, I started feeling my toes and everything, but it made me start thinking, man, you got to get out of here. I started looking around. Everything started looking different. I started looking at my buddies that were, you know, in their 30s and 40s at that point. I'm 22 at that point.
Mm-hmm.
And they're getting cortisone shots in their knees, and they're, you know, addicted to painkillers, and they're, you know, if you're not in the top 1% of that career, you're struggling. You're going to state fairs and high school gyms, and you know what I mean, like anywhere that'll pay you to wrestle.
Yeah.
And it's a really lopsided industry. And I called my best friend, and I said, hey man, if I come home, you want to start a band? He was like, shh, let's go.
Yeah.
I came home, started a rock band called Audion. It was like metal, like kind of Seven Dust-ish.
Mm-hmm.
And we lasted a couple years. And when we split, I met Bobby Wolf, who had just left Relic. And we were, not sugarcoated. We were drunk at Salty Grubs, and we ran into the same door. Boom. Uh-huh. He was trying to go out. I was trying to go in. Boom. We laughed, and we were like, let me buy a drink. All right, man, let's buy a drink. And we started shooting the shit, and he's a guitar player. I'm a singer. Oh, well, you should come over, man. We'll play. Within 3 weeks, we had like 10 songs, like covers, you know?
Yeah.
And we started playing U-Pi.
Yeah.
And we met Jared Mott, who played sax, and he joined us. So now we were a three-piece playing U-Pi open mics and hitting, you know, Barley's and these other bars. And then we met Dean Anschultz, who now is the drummer for Red, White, and Blue.
Uh-huh.
That was our first drummer.
Boy, what a great band those guys are.
Oh, yeah. Again, Scott and the boys, they do a great job. And Dean is an incredible musician.
Yeah.
Their drummer now. He's just an incredible human being, too. Eric Jernigan, who was a bass and tuba major at OSU, and he's a military band. He runs a military band for the whole East Coast.
Wow.
Yeah. And I saw him do a tuba solo in the art gallery.
Yeah.
And he blew my mind. I never seen it. I had never heard a tuba move so fast in my life. You know, like, is that a tuba?
Like,
it's
like, boom, boom.
That's what you think. But he's I'm like, how do you do that with a tuba?
Yeah.
The kid was incredible. But it was a nice crew.
Uh-huh.
And we, that was Acoustic Juggernaut. And it eventually, as people moved on, I was the only original member left, and the guy said, we want your name at the front. And I said, you guys are nuts. I don't want my name at the front.
Said, yeah.
It's Hoss and the Juggernauts.
Yeah.
You don't have a say. You're outvoted. I was like, whatever. So there we are.
Yeah, those were some fun places, man. Salty Grogs and Barley's.
Barley's, you're playing into the wall.
yeah.
Salty's, man. We used to put 450 people in Salty's. They'd be spilled out onto the patio.
Was that behind Kmart?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. I remember that. That
bar was nuts.
Oh, I used to have so much fun there.
We had a lot of fun. Yeah, I used to be on the patio all the time, man.
Yeah, we used to hang out there and and host some shows and stuff.
Was that
like
open
that
when your radio station
actually,
Freddie, was
the
over?
First time I ever met you, like, shook your hand, was at Salty Grogs. It was an afternoon. It was like a Sunday afternoon or something, and you were doing a remote.
And probably for a football game.
Yeah. You know? And I was there and I walked up. I was like, man, that's Freddie, my man.
And of course, we got our buddy JT.
Yeah. That's our mutual connection, really. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, man, I love Taboola.
Yeah. Jason Taboola, big fan, always been a big supporter of yours. And that's how I think we came to, to follow the band a little more, too, because they'd always talk you guys up and, you know, hey, you got to see these guys. And then, of course, he was a sales guy for the radio station. Mm-hmm. So usually when you guys were playing somewhere, he'd get the club to advertise and stuff. So, had that mutual connection there.
Yeah, everybody else.
Just to go back here for a second, what was your wrestling name?
Haas.
Oh, you're Haas.
So okay. Funny story. I walk into the office day one, right? I went down and did a visit and met the guy. The guy ran the place. His name was Les Thatcher. Uh-huh. He wrestled in the 50s, 60s, and 70s. And he wrestled the circuit with the original Four Horsemen and all the Georgia South guys. He wrestled the Southern circuits.
Yeah.
Danny Nightmare Davis and, you know, Jim Cornette and all those guys. And he goes, what's your name, kid? I go, my name's Joe. And he goes, nope, that doesn't work. Okay. He goes, we got six Joes. What's your name, kid? I was like, well, my family calls me Haas. That's it. Haas. Works. Perfect. 65-year-old pissed off Irish guy with a rough voice and smoked cigars he would light a cigar and smoke until it was dead and then just pull another one out and just never didn't have a cigar in his mouth. And he cursed like it was an art form.
These are some real characters, man. I'm just picturing this whole scenario.
It's incredible.
Some wrestling history and just picturing how some of this stuff was.
So wall of the wrestling school, because he described the wrestling circuits the same as the music circuits. So they traveled the same same cities and at the same times as the like the original Outlaws, David Allen Coe and Hank Williams Jr. and
Willie and Waylon
and Chris Christopherson and all these guys. And he actually was friends with Chris Christopherson. And but he's like, we would party at the same houses. We'd have gigs the same nights. We drove the same highways. We played pranks on each other. And it's wild to think of, like, you know, all the characters they used to play the worst pranks on each other. You know, suits back then were all tailor made.
Yeah.
You couldn't go to a store and just buy a suit that was hanging on the thing. They didn't have to get fitted.
Yeah.
So these guys, while the guy was in the ring, they would go and they would all them stitches. And this big buff guy would come out, put his suit on after the match, right? All the sleeves, the legs, the seam of the crotch, everything just split like the Great Tide. Oh, man. They used to take each other's tires off and put the car on blocks and drive their tires to the next show in the next city.
So they'd have to
buy all brand new tires, all brand new wheels, put them on their car, drive the city.
These are big time pranks. They played
big time pranks on each other. I'm so glad I was never at their level.
Oh, wow. That's big stuff there, man. That's
big stuff, man.
That's really putting some thought into it, too.
Oh, man. Imagine, how do you even come up with that kind of stuff?
I know. That's crazy. Big-time pranksters there, man.
Oh, yeah.
Oh,
these guys were nuts.
That's wild.
They were nuts. But there were lots of characters. I mean, like, not just in the ring. These guys are characters for real. The big personalities, big hearts.
Yeah.
You know, like, everybody's – behind the scenes, everybody pretty much gets along for the most part. You always have.
Boy, that's pretty wild, man. That had to be an interesting 4 or 5 years there, man. Wow.
It was crazy. It was crazy. Saw a lot of crazy stuff. a lot of crazy stuff. Man, I'm trying to think of a good one. Oh, the Big Show. Paul White.
Yeah.
He's a monster, right?
Yeah.
We're wrestling at Jillian's in Cincinnati, which is actually in Kentucky. It's in Covington, right across the river. And we've got Molly Holly, Rhino, and the Big Show. There's no real locker room. They've just got curtained off partitioned areas. Because you wrestle in this place called the Warehouse down there. It's just a big, giant room in the one back area. They just kind of separated it, give everybody as much privacy as possible. But the Warehouse kind of hunkers in the middle of the whole club. So there's stuff on one side, stuff on the other. So a lot of times the servers would cut through with trays of food and stuff, you know, to go to banquets or whatever. And this poor girl came rolling through with a tray of food while Paul White was naked. And you could hear him yell at her from every corner of Jillian's. He's like, get out of my dressing room! Man. Woo! You were talking about somebody who could fit 5 hot dogs in one hand while playing poker. We was the Bocas River Boat Casinos down in Indiana and Ohio right there. We used to do wrestle on those. Those are big.
Oh, that'd be crazy. I'll tell you what, it just knowing like the area of Kentucky and stuff. Boy, you had to hit some halls and some volunteer fire stations and stuff that were just like unbelievable. Yeah. I can only imagine what some of them bands looked like.
You know what? You don't even have to imagine, man. Whatever you're thinking is exactly what they look like. Oh yeah, man. And you know, they love it. They love everything about it.
World-class hecklers, I would imagine.
Oh yeah, and they're good at it too. They get you know, when you wrestle with a smaller troop like that, they get personal.
Yeah,
they get to know you better. They see you a lot. You know what I mean? So they're like, you'll be walking out like, "Hey, how's your girlfriend?" Well, you know, they'll just talk to you like it's Sunday afternoon. You're having tea.
Yeah,
like walking to the ring with your entrance music, kind of like, "How's your mom and dad doing? Are they good? Everything good?"
And then once you start, then
I can't really the best is the guys you know supposed to be the bad guys, and they're trying to talk crap afterwards. Like, "Hey man, you know, I just doing my thing."
Hey, you guys are the biggest bunch of hillbillies I've ever seen. I can't wait to get out of this town. Half of you people here probably can't count to 10. And
it sounds like Freddie's got a promo or one or two in his life.
Yeah, you know. Or I could, one or the other.
Oh, yeah, man.
No, I'll tell you, I had been a wrestling fan all my life, man. I go back to the days when we had a small black and white TV it had rabbit ear antennas or maybe a bullseye.
Some foil on it.
Yeah, and you're trying to get in. The ones were on like Channel 9 out of Steubenville and Channel 61 out of Cleveland were the two main ones. And this goes back to the days of like Bobo Brazil.
Oh, yeah, man.
And Pompero Purpo, the Argentinian wild man. And they would always show matches from Cobo Arena in Detroit.
Nice.
And like back then, that was like the big thing. And you would see Bobo Brazil against like, you know, Bruno San Martino and all those greats.
Yeah.
And the picture was so fuzzy. And, you know, the cameras were so far away and everything. But it was still
great.
You
know,
you would sit there and then I would use all those moves on my brother.
Lay out little couch cushions.
Yeah.
Drop the big elbow. Oh, same thing, man. Yeah.
You know, the those days of wrestling were just amazing. And that was one thing I always wanted to do, never had a chance. But when I was little, man, I just wanted to get the Cobo Arena in Detroit to see Bobo Brazil.
You know? Oh, yeah.
Like, I got to go there. I got to see this, you know. But I never That's had a chance. Cool. But, you know, I remember they used to have, like, you know, Bruno would wrestle at Girard High School gym a lot. And they had him and Dynamite Dominic DiNucci was another guy that would wrestle down there a lot. And then Stamp Auditorium, Struthers Fieldhouse. Mm-hmm. And you know, I mean, I've been my son Matt, he is a huge wrestling fan. He's like an encyclopedia. He could do a podcast. He knows every single thing about wrestling that
you I've know, got these tapes that Jim Cornette made personally. They're 5 VHS tapes and they're called Jim Cornette's, I forget what the title is, but they're all the matches. He dubbed them all together for any guy that got a contract and he gave them all these tapes. And with them came a pamphlet of handwritten notes for each match of what to pay attention to, ring psychology, execution of moves. They broke it down. He broke it down so eloquently and beautiful.
Wow.
And I still have them. And my brother-in-law is a huge wrestling fan. He's got, like, he's got a little man cave. You walk in and you're like, whoa.
Yeah.
All the original figures still, some out of the box and then another one in the box. So one I can mess with, one I don't. Yeah. Like, he's that guy. You know what I mean? Like, and it's awesome, you know?
Yeah.
He's got all this stuff. I was telling about these tapes. He's like drooling at the mouth. Like, I want to see these. I'm talking killer matches like Tully Blanchard versus Magnum TA in the steel cage. Like, oh, man, iconic. Ric Flair versus Dusty Rhodes with the Roll of Nickels match.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, remember the Roll of Nickels match? Where they knock him out of the Roll of Nickels. Oh, my God, the American Dream. It's such good stuff. The Midnight Express versus the Orient Express.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, killer matches. But each one of them, you got this big, thick thing full of handwritten notes from Jim Cornette laying out what is important to pay attention to in these matches.
Wow.
And it's stuff all the way from back in the 50s and 60s all the way up into the 80s and 90s when you had, like, I'd say one of the most recent matches on the tape would have been the Bret Hart versus Stone Cold hour-long match. I mean, that was an incredible match itself. Yeah,
and so he breaks it down. So, but I mean, this is, Jim Cornette's the real deal. Like when it comes to the,
he is a goofball in the camera, but he's a real deal behind stage. Uh-huh. Yeah, and he's madly respected widely across the entire.
So thing. He really breaks it down, mm-hmm. and here's what they were trying to do, or maybe you could have did this here. Or...
Not a wrestler himself, really, mm-hmm. but a psychologist, so to speak, as far That's as amazing. How things work in the ring and what people pay attention to, what not to do to ruin the illusion. Of pain, you know what I mean? Yeah. You go into a match knowing that there's going to be so much pain. Like you've already accepted that amount. You know, you try really not to kill each other. You know you're going to hurt each other anyway. You know, But every now and again, you run into somebody who wants to hurt you. You know, mm-hmm. so, you know, they lay out. There's matches in there that he laid out. Look, this dude's shooting right now. He's trying to hurt him. You see it right now. And look how he reacts. You know, and so you get to see how somebody defends themselves. How they. You know, how to know. A lot of times you work with guys that don't speak English, too.
Oh, yeah.
So it's all body language. And that's crazy. I had to wrestle with Kaz Hayashi and, from Japan. And his English is like, at the time, I mean, it's been, you know, we're 15 years ago now.
Yeah.
At the time, he was like, you know, maybe like 100 words. And, you know, I mean, that's, you think 100 words is not, no, it's not a lot. It's not a lot, you know. It's really not. And you're shooting him off and you work the same side of the body so that, you know, you never – have to question it, but you catch a lot of elbows and forearms and knees and ankles, you know, to the face and the arms, and you just it's inevitable. There's going to be some.
Yeah, I think a lot of people don't realize that about wrestling. There's a lot to it. You know?
Oh yeah, man, you know,
say it's what crazy. You want, but
the history of it. I mean, it's an old carny. I mean, it's the carnival workers. You know, like Andre the Giant's one of the coolest. I mean, like before he came over, he was able to do a standing backflip at his size. When he was in his 20s, he was actually in his 40s, like age-wise, body age-wise.
Yeah.
But when he was in his 20s, he could do a standing backflip. Can you imagine?
Oh.
I would pay to see that.
I would, too. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, he could have just been an acrobat.
Yeah.
You know?
Wow.
The stories about Andre the Giant, too, are just legendary. Like, how much beer that guy would,
would look like a can of beer in his hand.
Yeah, a bottle of Jack in his hand would look like that. And this guy would drink, like, 40 cans of beer. Like,
oh, my God,
You know, just to drink, like, you know, we're drinking a six-pack, and, you know, this guy put down 40 beers.
Yeah, he's got the Milwaukee 32-pack.
Camo
cans.
Oh, that's some crazy stuff. Hey, let's get back to music.
I mean, true story.
You know what? We might just have to have a wrestling show here at some point.
I'll come talk to you about it.
You know, that's the beauty of this like podcast because I learned so much about all these guys and everybody has an interesting story and something off the hook. And so let's get back to music now. You're playing the open mic nights and UPI and these different places. And then where did it go from there?
You know, we started playing around. We got to open for some pretty cool people. I met Dennis Drummond, and we all got along. I met Dennis at Barley's. He was 13. We were playing the open mic. He was playing the open mic. And he came up. We played first. He came up to me and goes, man, you sound really good. I was like, thanks, man. Thank you very much. And I'd never seen him play. And then he went up and did his thing, and there was a football game on. It was a Sunday afternoon. Or whatever it was, I forget what it was, but it was a Sunday, and there was football on, and he was jamming. It was a Sunday night, it was football on, and he was not paying attention to what he was playing whatsoever. But everybody in the crowd was like just melted, and he was watching the game, and I could tell he was watching it. So I walked and said, "Hey man, what was the score of that game?" He goes, "Ooh, you caught me." And I was just like, kid, how do you do that? Like, how do you play like that? And, you know, I ain't done nothing but get any better.
Yeah.
So I started playing with his band and my band. And there was a period of like 2-3 years there where I was between the two bands. I was doing, you know, 4 or 5 shows a week, every week for 3-4 months in the summer, you know, and then everything slows down in the winter for everybody. Yeah. You lose half your venues. And but yeah, we kept trucking along the Juggernauts, you know, Dennis comes and sits in with us when he's in town, and vice versa. I go sit in with him. If he needs any members and need a fill in, he calls me, and any of the guys will help him out at any time. You know, my guys are super professional. Jordan, Mike, Roger, and then like Tim Parker, my sax player, and Fredo Brazier, my other sax player. You know, when they flip flop in and out, they're just they're all teachers. So you know they're professional to begin with, you know?
Right.
And they carry themselves so well, but they're they're seriously underrated as far as the how good musicians they are, and they can sit in with anybody in this town and help. You know what I mean? Like, they're just that good.
I would definitely like to see you and Dennis drumming together. I think that would be awesome, we did
a,
man.
We did a show before COVID at Los Gallos in Boardman. It was Dennis, me, and Leanne. Well, Leanne and Rama were there. They came to watch.
Yeah.
And we brought them all. We had all of us on stage. My band, Dennis's Dennis. We had Nick Sinatra was there. We had, I forget who's playing sax. I can't remember who's playing sax. But we had trumpet. Kyle was playing trumpet. Kyle Dunn was playing trumpet. It was crazy. And it was one of the, we played with a little help from my friends. And with Leanne and Rama on guitar and Dennis on guitar at the same time. And it was magical, man. It was magical. Man. People still come up to me that were at that show. I'm like, I have not seen a better show since. I'm like, man, I appreciate that. But yeah, like, I mean, it was incredible. It was so much fun.
It'd be nice if they showed up Saturday night and did like a remake of the Dash. Wouldn't that be something?
That would be cool.
I think Leanne's the
They're doing a show in the summertime in August. And Dennis committed as long as he's not touring. And Mama asked me, I was like, I got a wedding that day, I gotta play. I was like, dude, why?
Yeah.
1 month earlier I wouldn't have signed a contract.
that would have been awesome.
Yeah.
I'm sure you guys would get back together at some point.
Yeah, I've gone down and sang with Dennis in Nashville.
Uh-huh.
And I plan on doing that to go and visit him again, man. He's a class act. I love that kid.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. That is that will be a lot of fun. And you know, it just goes to show you the excellent musicians that we have in this area and have always had. And, you know, I mean, from you want to go back to the 60s all the way to today, we have just had a string of just talented people.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a lot of really good bands that come from this area that, you know, musicians and like solo and like full band. Look at the Vindies, man. They're packed full of good musicians. Jackie's the bomb. She's amazing. But then so is John Anthony. He's had him. He played with us for a couple of years too. Mm-hmm. He helped us out when we needed a hand. And Clay Cawley, the keyboard. I mean, he's just incredible. And Eddie Davis, who was the original drummer for Red, White, and Blue, is the Vindies drummer. That is like cool, you know. Yeah. It's just like flop back and forth. That's what I love about this town. Everybody seems to get along pretty well.
It's like a family here.
I agree, man.
Yeah, you know what? And that's the way it should be. You know, everybody's out there trying to do the same thing. You know what I mean? As far not doing the same thing musically,
trying
to make it and trying to come out and have a good
time.
The
table, exactly.
Right. And you know what? And if you have the love and respect of each other, that makes it a lot better. You know, I mean, you know, and there are some people that have like egos or like, oh, that band sucks or screw them guys or whatever. But that's definitely not the way to be. You know?
I agree. You know? When I first moved back and started that rock band, the scene was so angry. Everybody was so angry at each other. And we're going back 15, 16 years now. I mean, there were some really good bands. Asleep, good friends of mine. I loved those guys. I'm trying to think of some of the other bands that were around at the time. My mind it eludes me at the moment, but nobody liked each other. And Asleep actually were the first ones who came to me and said, hey, let's do a cross genre show. Let's change it up. You know, we're tired of playing with bands that, you know, are always trying to outdo us. Let's do something where neither one of us are trying to compete.
Yeah.
And our fans will get to see two different things.
Yeah.
We had killer shows at the Cellar, at Salty's, downtown. We had great shows together. And we still stay friends to this day. And, you know, I feel like us, Jones for Revival, Asleep, The Zoo.
Yeah.
I feel like all these bands and a bunch of other bands that I don't mean not to mention, but you know, I'm old now and, but they all slowly started to work together more. And, we had the Cedars in an original location.
Yeah.
You had Barley's, you had, Salty Grogs, you had, O'Donnell's, you know, we had good spots to go play and people came out. You know,
that was a good nice run with a lot of cool bands there, like with the Zoo and Jones for Revival and Vex Fest and all that kind of stuff.
I can't wait to bring that back.
Yeah, those were some good days, man.
We want to bring Vex back hard. I mean, we really do. And we were teasing it when right before COVID. We're teasing it that year. We were thinking 2019, we could do it again. And then COVID hit, it was like squash.
Yeah, now for people that aren't familiar with Vex Fest, why don't you give us a little history? And the
Vex Fest is the largest free show in the city of Youngstown. When we put it on, I'm actually part of the committee.
Right.
You know, and the goal is to get it completely paid for. And so the doors are wide open. We'll make our money on beer, and that money goes towards paying for everything that's out there, the people that are working, the... You know, the electric, sound light, the sound, security, light, security, you know. Bathrooms.
Yeah.
The fencing alone is incredible, that, you know, what you pay for that stuff. And, you know, and the permits and the legal fees. And that you got to have a lawyer on board that can do all that paperwork for you. And God bless Freddie Raffini for being the man. These guys, Dan Crump, Freddie Raffini, John Jones, those are the godfathers of X-Fest. So those three guys started it. And it just slowly built, and I came on board at him at four or five, and that's when I just started playing the show. Yeah. I didn't even get involved in the actual making of it until 8, 9, 10.
Uh-huh.
And it grew and grew and grew. At one point, it was so big though, it was almost unmanageable. We had 5 stages, like 65 bands, like, but we shrunk it. For 10, and for people that don't know, when you hear the word Vex Fest, a lot of people will come from, you know, 100 miles away, because they're going to see a lot of music. And we try to do all local bands, and then from just outside the area. So we bring some Cleveland bands down, and we've had some killer acts that have come through, like Tropodelic are nationally touring now, and they, we had Zach Deputy started. He used to play at Aces. In the strip mall.
Yeah, you know what? I think that's one of the last times I saw you at Ace's Wild Wings.
Zach Deputy used to go and play there, and then, you know, he blew up, and he's all over the place, and he's a one-man band, but he's incredible. And he headlined 10 for us, you know?
Uh-huh.
What's the one band? I can't think of the headline. They blew the power out. I can't think of them right now. I'm having a moment. But they blew the power twice downtown. They hit so much. They're only a two-man band. There's so much equipment, some lights and cool stuff. Uh-huh. Just boom. Oh, man, there's been some killer acts to go through there.
And didn't Hailstorm play there one time?
If they did, it was before I got there. It started off as a really hard festival. It was a hard rock festival.
Yeah.
And it slowly started to transition into just a music festival where we had cross-genre, multi-genre.
Yeah.
And, everything from hip-hop to heavy metal. Which are the two things, funny enough, that will keep you from getting an insurance policy for a big festival.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, so, everything in between, yeah. It's a really cool thing that happens when we're able to do it. It's been spaced out now. It's probably been 4 years now since the last
one. So we're about due for one, man.
We are totally due for
it. And we have good space for it now with the Covelli and the park opened up. Luke Bryan down here, for crying out loud. We got all kinds of space.
I'll tell you what. When you look at that whole area, I just picture all kinds of crazy stuff that could go on down there, entertainment-wise.
When they said Luke Bryan was coming, all I could think of was Kenny Chesney people coming down to Youngstown and doing what they do in Pittsburgh. I just want to watch it
Kenny Chesney concert that was at YSU. Was that who's that?
Zach Brown.
That was Zach Brown. Brown. That's Brown. Zach Brown.
Oh, Kenny Chesney, you'll know, because it'll take days to get away and get out of it.
I get insanity. It. But I'll tell you what, that whole area down there along the river, they beautiful. Can do all kinds of different things.
I mean, they should.
Even if you wanted to do like a 2-3 day thing with camping and stuff,
you got the
stages and the area.
We should do a Midwest.
Yeah. You know what? Downtown Youngstown could probably pull something like that off.
We could pull it off.
You know, I think that the potential for that is really endless.
Put a stage on opposite ends of the city, use the amp.
Yeah.
Is that by by YSU?
Yeah.
And use two on down in the actual downtown area. You got four stages.
Yeah.
Put them at each point.
Yep.
Oh, that'd be wicked.
Oh,
yeah. Vendors all over the place. Awesome. All the restaurants open.
Yeah.
Oh. You know, I think that if we get some, you know, and I'll tell you, Eric Ryan has done a fantastic job.
Kenny, great.
From being a steel worker that got a loan to open the cellar to what he is involved into, man. I mean, it is that is a fantastic success story.
Yeah, it is.
And, you know, and he learned along the way. And, you know, when you think about all the bands that played at the Cellar, you know, I mean, even these guys like Tommy Castro and the Blues Guys and Joe Bonamassa.
Yep. Oh,
I mean, there was a point when Joe Bonamassa and Cornell Bogdan were going to different schools and talking about the blues, and Joe would bring his guitar.
I love Cornell.
Oh, he's a great guy.
Yes,
his daughter's a friend of mine, and they're good people.
I got to get Cornell on here because me and Cornell have so many stories.
You guys got history.
We could go on for days. We would be sitting on.
I'd be a fly on the wall over that. Let me be a fly on the wall for that one.
We've had so many good times and so much fun, man, over the years, and just all these rock and roll crazy stories and road trips that went for days and stuff like that, man. We could go on. I think the statute of limitations is done on most of them.
I was going to come back and press charges at this point.
Yeah, or whatever, you know.
That's silly, man.
I'm surprised he hasn't gone to jail a few times after some of the stuff he's pulled.
But, we have had so much fun. But, yeah, getting back to, like, Eric Ryan and, you know, in the Cellar, and, I mean, you know, Poison and, you know, just David Allan Coe and just, you know, who I used to like that used to be down there a lot, and I don't know whatever happened to that guy, Tony C and the Truth.
Oh,
you remember,
man.
Remember him with that just what a little bit more.
Tony C and the
you know,
Truth.
I did it one time or did it two
times. Yeah. Yeah. Whatever happened to them?
I don't know. But they used to pack that place.
Yeah, they did.
How about Disco Inferno or Disco Explosion? It was one of them, too.
Well, Disco Inferno, there's like five of them.
Yeah.
There's like, they like interchange and they get sent to different areas. There's like, it's like.
We used to go see Disco at the Cellar and it would be just the greatest night ever because.
I love the mirror with the big pile of baby powder on it. Like, those guys killed me. Their setup was hilarious.
Good times down there.
You know, and I mean, to go from the Cellar and then to, you know, getting, you know, Packard Music Hall going and getting the Covelli going. And the amp, and I'll tell you, I mean, we are set up for something major.
Yeah.
If somebody really put their minds to it, and you know, well, probably need the money. That's what it boils down to. But
money makes everything happen.
If somebody could really pull off something big, every time even coming down here, I look over there and, you know, I even think of like some of these big bike rallies that we have around and stuff that we could jump in there and really do one with the camping and everything.
Yeah.
Or even just any kind of like big music festival. I mean, you could do some camping down there, you know, primitive, of course, but I mean, you know, these people bring these campers or tents and
it'd be like the Ledges back in the track down in Youngstown.
That'd be wicked.
Ledges.
God. Ledges used to be so much fun.
Oh, the craziness. And it hasn't changed. It hasn't changed since day one.
I played the second Joan Fest. We opened the whole day.
Uh-huh.
They scheduled us at noon.
Yeah.
We were a new band. Dennis played with me.
Uh-huh.
We played a 9-minute version of Number 41 by Dave Matthews. Because nobody was there. We started playing,
yeah,
and there's nobody in front of us. We're on that little stage across from the big stage. You know, the beach is on your left.
Yeah.
And we just start playing. The sun's beating the crap out of us. And then all of a sudden, like, we're two songs deep. Now there's 20 people in front of us. Now we're five songs deep. Now there's like 50, 60 people in front of us. By the time we stopped, there was like 150 people, 200 people in front of us. And they're all just waking up, but they all had like big grins on their faces. And when we got done, they were, of course, everybody was baked or drunk.
And yeah.
Somebody, right. And they were like, that was the best way to wake up ever.
So what were some of the other songs you guys were doing?
Oh, man.
We wake and bake at Kelsey's.
At that point, we did 41 by Dave Matthews. We probably, going back that far, we probably did Jason Mraz. We probably did... what was that? Well, you done done me and you bet I felt it. And then we had originals too. So we probably played five or six of our originals.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think of what other covers we might have done with Dennis. I mean, we definitely played like Ain't No Sunshine and
you singing Ain't No Sunshine, man. That song was made for you, man.
Oh, I appreciate it.
That's
Bill Withers is the man.
Yeah, that's a good one.
I love Bill Withers.
Yeah.
Lovely day.
Yeah.
Perfect.
Yeah, we do Lovely Day.
Perfect song.
We do Lovely Day. I was when I was playing at Susie Dogs and Drafts and Boardman and Alexis Walters on the news.
Yeah.
She was working, she was bartending part time and happened to be there. And I sang that song and I watched her cringe. And I was like, was it that bad? She goes, no, that's my least favorite song. In the whole world? And she's like, I can't stand that song. So I laughed. So the next time I was there and I played it, she was bartending, I dedicated it to her. Uh-huh. I was like, did you like my song? She goes,
so now once you started playing, you know, after we had the whole enlightenment and all that kind of thing. So who are some of your influences and who are the, you know, what are the bands, you know, that you really started getting into?
Yeah. You know, well, I grew up, in church and, listen, in high school, it was a lot of the groups. So Boyz II Men, Drew Hill, the Bobby Brown and
New Edition.
Yeah, New Edition. But I'm trying to think of some of the As Yet and all these other R&B groups. Mm-hmm. And then on the flip side, at the same time I was listening to them, I was listening to Nirvana and Soundgarden and Pearl Jam and like the really good albums, like 10. By Pearl Jam, that album is like, hands down, best album ever. You know, Soundgarden, Black Hole Sun, you know, like that album. So I was just both sides of the coin the whole time. And then when I moved away, is where I started like dip into like blues a little bit. And when I moved back, is where I started really getting heavy and like get influenced by like B.B. King, Jimi Hendrix, the Jimi Hendrix blues, like the Albert King. And then go back even further. I started really in my late 20s, I started to like, I've always been a big proponent of you don't know where you're going to, you know where you've been.
Yeah.
So I started looking into like Lead Belly and Big Mama Thornton and all these old school, where blues really came from.
Right.
Just blow my mind. And then seeing how classic rock like Zeppelin and the Stones kind of took that sound and like modernized it at that time, you know, and that's kind of how those are my influences. I mean, so, you know, blues, soul, funk, R&B. And that's what I always say I am. I'm blues, soul, funk, R&B and rock. That's what we are.
Yeah.
You know, we're little cornucopia.
Yeah. Yeah. So what can people expect when they come out to dash in on Saturday night?
A little bit of everything, man. We do covers and originals. We're breaking out some blues tunes. We got some fun songs coming out. My guys are tight. We have a lot of fun together, and I love to make my sax players work. So they can expect a sax heavy and vocal heavy night. We're gonna have a good time. We're gonna throw down. Anybody's ever seen me knows I can't sit still on stage. So if I'm moving, they're moving. Usually, you know, we get the whole room going. We should have some fun. We're going to cover some fun stuff, do some old school originals, and we hit some, like, Nathaniel Radcliffe and some.
There we go.
Yeah.
Okay.
We're going to throw it out, man. Yeah. We're gonna have a good time. I can't even think of everything we're doing. But, I hope to see everybody out. 7 o'clock, 7 p.m. It's gonna be a blast. And I know I got a nice group of people coming out haven't seen me in a long time. And I think the boys are itching to play. Back. So
I hope so. Yeah. I think it's going to be a great night. And the place is going to be packed. Dash in Mahoning Avenue, west side of Youngstown, 7 o'clock showtime. I get there a little early, man. Make sure you get a seat.
Yeah, they got good food, too.
Get back, man. They got good food there and everything. So make a night of it this Saturday. And, I just want to thank you guys for stopping by.
Fred, awesome. I can't thank you enough.
We got to have you back on, man. Those were some interesting stories, some crazy stories.
Wow,
you know, the wrestling stories and just the whole thing, the influence of you singing in church and all that kind of stuff, man. It a great conversation today.
I appreciate you.
I just want to thank you for Thanks stopping for by. Tracy Randall, Tracy from the Hood. Always good to see you. You know nice, that. Tracy. And it's always good to talk to you, except for the Steelers hat. And wait until I talk to my sister. And
you can't talk to her about this.
She doesn't listen. I got to let her know that this is unacceptable, that she would not only give you the hat and then so that you would just come there and flaunt it in my face.
I did this for Mother's Day.
Yeah.
Okay. Mother's Day is coming up.
Yeah. All right. All right.
She's a good girl.
Well, listen, thanks everybody. And boy, it's been a great time. Haas and the Juggernauts haven't been playing out lately, and you're definitely in for a treat. Saturday night, 7 o'clock, dash in Mahoning Avenue. And, you know, we didn't even talk about our libation here. You know what? Usually I have two of these down, and I've just been listening to Haas's stories.
Yeah, man.
And I'm going to finish this down. And,
cheers.
You know what? I got to admit, Haas mixed this perfectly, man. I mean, he's
okay.
Oh, yeah,
he got
right.
that bartender's pour, and it was just like, you know, Joe's like, well, you need a shot glass? And Joe's going, no.
I got this, Vince, but I do, man.
Do. Well, cheers, man. Good luck. Haas, once again, thanks. Tracy,
thank
good
you.
To see you. Joe Danier, thank you.
Thanks,
and,
Joe.
We're going to wrap it up, man. Great show, and we'll see you next week.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to this show on Youngstown Studio. If you like our programming, we invite you to subscribe to our YouTube channel, follow our Facebook page, or subscribe to your favorite podcast platform like iTunes or Spotify. This is original Youngstown content, and we would appreciate you sharing the videos and the word about us. Thank you.